true. You, my friends, are going to be purchasing stock in competing firms of my choice, which will drive up their price substantially and make me a substantially wealthier man, mostly because I own a huge amount of stock in said firms. That was when one of the asshats in the back raised his hand. He was a middle-aged black man with white tufts of hair on the sides of his head. "This isn't kindergarten," I said, staring at him. "What do you want?" "Stock fraud," he said, as if I should be offended. "Isn't this a bit outside your bailiwick?" "Okay, kudos for using the word bailiwick. What do you mean?" "You're a world-famous supervillain," the man continued. "We saw you rescue the city last year during the big disaster, but that was after you killed the Extreme and escaped the Society of Superheroes Moon Prison. Shouldn't you, I don't know, be trying to take over the world or something?" Cindy looked over at me.
"He's right, boss. This is kind of beneath you."
"I'm having a very stressful year," I said, snapping back. "It's stock fraud with a pirate ship on land and mind control. This is very much not beneath me."
"I disagree," Diablo Man said, backing up Cindy. "A year ago, you'd have had a musical number plus a half dozen dead bodies."
"I disagree. 'Tis very good," Nikki Tesla said. "Most avant-garde."
"You can speak real English, Nikki. The fake German is fooling nobody." Nikki looked aside and muttered in perfect English, "Spoil sport." I lifted my fingers and shot a fireball into the air, causing everyone but my henchmen to take a step back.
"Silence! We're going to do this my way, and I'm not going to hear any more.
Halt, evildoer! So says the Nightwalker!"
A cheerful female voice shouted, before a figure in a costume similar to mine swung from a window above, landing on the ground in front of me. She was a small Japanese-American woman with long dyed blonde hair sticking out from the side of her hood. Amanda Douglas was the second Nightwalker, a billionaire hotel magnate and evil cultist's daughter who had taken up the mantle after the original's death. She was one of the city's two superheroes and pretty good at her job despite her relative inexperience. We'd helped each other in the big disaster and even hung out socially, but didn't let that affect our working relationship.
"Your foul felonies have reached their finality,"
Amanda shouted, producing an extendable staff which then produced an electrical charge on both ends.
"Merciful Moses," I said, rubbing the bridge of my nose. "What is this, the 60s? "Well, she was trained by my old partner," Cloak muttered. "I'm going to assume the hostage situation is resolved."
"Well, good for them," I said, pointing at her. "I'm not in the mood for any interruptions. Get her."
"You're not in the mood for many things lately," Cloak said.
Diablo Man leapt off the side of the pirate ship and charged at her, my super-strong henchman immediately getting sent flying backwards by one of Amanda's uppercuts. A half-dozen black sweater-wearing pirate crew charged out from the hole next, all of them with a stylized M on their attire. Amanda displayed stunning gymnastics as she leapt over henchmen, spin-kicked others, zapped a few more, and hurled others into each other. I meanwhile levitated downward with wormwood in my arms and pulled out a computer tablet to begin programming my plan. I couldn't bring myself to throw in some witty commentary.
God, they were right. I was phoning it in. "Perhaps supervillainy isn't for you since Mandy."
"Don't mention her name," I growled. Cindy managed to backstab Amanda with an industrial-strength taser as Amanda knocked away the last of my goons. Amanda yowled, fell to her knees, and then grabbed Cindy in a judo throw, hurling her in the air. I levitated upwards, grabbed Cindy, and then hovered back down.
"Thanks for the save," Cindy said.
"You're welcome," I said, turning back to Amanda. I handed my tablet over to Cindy, who finished programming it. Diablo Man was getting up for the next round, but I shook my head to him. This was my time to show off. Amanda pointed at me.
"The police will arrive any minute to finish off your scheme." Damn, I should have used finish in that earlier line. "Anyway, you won't be able to..." Wait, is that John Wormwood? The guy who got a bunch of people killed because the money for moving people to hospitals from refugee camps disappeared?
I paused. "Yes?" Amanda narrowed her eyes, paused, then started to fake choking.
"Oh, no, you bastard! You're using your magic to drain away my supernatural power! I can't move! I can't stop! Whatever you're going to do to him!"
I crossed my arms. "Really? Have you no pride?" Amanda banged on the ground with her fist.
"Oh, whoa! My inability to save this horrible person from his fate! Whatever it may be!"
"Ah, oh, for the love of King David," I muttered, then looked at Wormwood. Cindy handed him the remote.
John, I command you to sell all of your stock. The mind-controlled executive nodded and short-sold everything. I addressed the crowd of stockholders. Now, it's technically illegal for you to act on this information, but... All of them were already taking advantage of the deal to make more money. I sighed. Why am I not surprised?
Because you've lived here more than a year? Cindy said.
Point taken. I checked my remote and proceeded to transfer the resulting funds into my account, having made $250 million and tripling my fortune. Sighing, I paid my henchmen their section and sent the vast majority of my wealth to various charities around the city before wiping out the records with a keystroke.
So much for not being Robin Hood, Cloak said.
I have enough to buy anything I want, I said, frowning. Anything I can't afford, I steal. I'm just keeping myself motivated by giving the excess to those who could use a helping hand.
Sure.
Looking out the window of the stock exchange, I saw a couple of police cars with flashing lights. The department was still being rebuilt after having had a substantial amount of its ranks revealed to be insane death cultists. Staring at them in disgust, I said, "Gather up my half-conscious goons and tie Amanda up. We're bringing her with us."
"You're taking her prisoner?" Diablo Man said, surprised.
"Yep," I said, gesturing to a pair of magical chains I had brought along for just this sort of occasion. "We'll let her out after a suitable period of time where clearly she'd been held hostage and was unable to stop this."
"Thanks,"
Amanda said through faked, strained breaths.
"Who are we taking her back to the lair for a kinky sex game?"
Cindy said, a broad grin on her face. "That happened once," I said, staring at her. "If by once, if you counted when I was really depressed and Cindy and I had slept together for a month. I still felt guilty about it, but it was about the only thing that kept me alive when I thought I'd never see Mandy again. We're not making that a regular part of our repertoire."
"It's good to see you again, Gary,"
Amanda said, right before Cindy lassoed her with the chains, the magic causing the bonds to move around her and squeeze.
"The city hasn't been the same without the supervillain without mercy, trademark."
"That's the problem. I managed to get away scot-free, especially once attempts to locate the money had proven difficult, because the majority of it wasn't supposed to be in Omega Corp's hands to begin with, but it left me feeling no better about myself. Only one thing could do that, the one thing reality couldn't permit me. With that, I started to think back on the present, and the fact President Omega was trying to kill me. Chapter 10. The bad guy for the book is POTUS.
"The president has taken a hit out on me?" I said, incredulous. "For robbing him?"
"Don't act so surprised," Gabrielle said, looking to one side. "President Omega is the most corrupt and bigoted United States president since William Henry Harrison. He hates supers, aliens, and mystery men. He also bought the election with his company's millions. You probably did more damage to his plans by destroying his company than we've done in 8 years of fighting him through the legal process."
"Still, I'm more surprised I'm not dead than anything else."
Gabrielle paused. "There's rumors that he sent several hit squads and assassins against you already. People who end up with their throats torn out and bodies drained of blood. Know anything about that?"
I looked away. Maybe.
"Also, a bunch of ghosts dragged a wizard who tried to curse your family to hell." Carrie started whistling, "Whistle While You Work," as she continued to try and clean up the mess. "Have you been attacked randomly by supervillains and anti-heroes trying to kill you this past year?" Gabrielle asked.
I blinked. "Isn't that normal?"
Gabrielle felt her face. "No, Gary, it's not."
"Well, don't I have egg on my face?"
"There's also rumors that President Omega has plans for something big in his final year of office. Something that he can try to use to change the balance of superhuman baseline relationships forever." I snorted at her description of the president's actions.
"Like leaving everyone to die in Falcon Crest City wasn't enough."
People often talked about the destructive nature of superhuman fights and the government's incompetence during a crisis, but usually they were both pretty on the ball when it came to rebuilding things. The ideal superhuman-government relationship had the former fighting the bad guy, the latter evacuating citizens, and the two of them cooperating to make sure everything was cleaned up thereafter. The biggest good superheroes did wasn't actually punching out terrorists and bank robbers, but using their powers for rescue work during disasters, as well as lending themselves to relieve global crises. Things like oil spills, earthquakes, typhoons, and worse had been prevented, with millions saved thanks to the efforts of heroes.
Recently, though, superheroes had started including more and more people uninterested in anything but punishment, while the government had begun to act like they didn't need superheroes at all. President Omega was very good at making the latter seem like a flaw of the heroes rather than the reverse, especially when he preferred his heroes violent and jingoistic. Could you tell I'd voted for the other guy? Gabrielle nodded. The legislation Omega drafted in response to the fall has drastically increased his powers, powers he intends to use to finally push through the changes he's long desired. Truth be told, this has been coming a long time. People are sick of supervillains, superheroes, useless police, technology they don't understand, alien invasion, colorful terrorist attacks they can't defend against, and constantly being in the shadows of gods. Superheroes are what people should aspire to, I said, not something people should bring down to their level. Gabrielle and Carrie both looked at me, their thoughts obvious. After all, who was I to talk about superheroes when I'd chosen to go the exact opposite route with my powers?
It's a good point, Cloak observed. You could do so much more.
I could do worse, too, I thought back. You got any theories as to who might have pulled this off?
Not without knowing the circumstances of his death, no. I do know this might be a cosmological shift point in history, though. The historical records of the 40th century speak of a twilight of the superheroes that occurs sometime in this era. A terrible conflict that results in the deaths of the majority of superhumans, as well as much of the baseline population. It's an event that followed the deaths of the Nightwalker and Ultra God.
You didn't think to mention this until now?
I thought to Cloak. It's only one of many alternate pasts.
Alternate pasts?
There are an infinite number of pasts, the way there are an infinite number of futures. Continuity in this reality is more like suggestions rather than hard facts. For example, there's a Gary Karkovsky, teen reporter who was Gabrielle's love interest in the 60s. A Gary Karkovsky who was Mandy, Foundation agent's husband in the 90s. There's also a grim and gritty Gary Karkovsky who was a cannibal pimp in a universe where superheroes just appeared last year and are all arrogant sociopaths.
A cannibal pimp?
Yeah, we don't like to talk about that universe.
Do you think the government is responsible for Alter God?
I asked, deciding to push all that to the back of my mind. Gabrielle looked down.
I don't know.
There was a time when the idea of the government having the most powerful and beloved superhero in the world assassinated would have sounded like tinfoil hattery nonsense spouted by people like, well, me. But hearing Alter Goddess seriously contemplate that was like a punch to the gut. Things had changed in the past 2 decades, becoming less and less fun. It was harder to trust the government, and the government reacted by becoming less and less trustworthy. Then again, maybe it had always been that way, and I just hadn't noticed until adulthood because I'd grown up a reasonably privileged white kid. Still, I hoped it wasn't President Omega. I could deal with a president wanting to kill me. I wasn't sure I wanted to deal with a world where the president wanted to kill the society of superheroes. I was too much of an anarchist to believe in American democracy, but still liked to think our leaders had some standards. My mistake.
Alter God's dead? Carrie asked, shocked. He once came to our school to talk about how drugs were awful.
Yeah, I was dealing pot with Cindy that day, so I missed it.
Gabrielle gave a half-hearted chuckle. Thanks, Gary, I needed that.
Yes, that was totally a joke and not at all what actually happened.
A lot of those public relations visits were Ultra Force construct doppelgangers anyway. It allowed him to do more good than any single man could accomplish.
Keep it under wraps for the time being, Carrie, I said, taking a deep breath. There's an imposter running about and he's after Gabrielle.
Carrie nodded. Cross my heart and hope not to die, because then I'd become a spook and I'd be surrounded by friends.
Sometimes I had no words.
Okay, sure.
Carrie and I had gotten into plenty of arguments about the fact that my job as the Reaper's cloak-bearer was to serve as a psychopomp, that is, a guy who sends spooks to their natural resting place. I'd sent onward literally thousands of ghosts since getting it, and some of them had been people Carrie had known. The vast majority of them had been happy with it, though. It's just Carrie had difficulty telling the difference between alive and dead. Then again, I wasn't the one who insisted Mandy could be healed no matter what. I made a mental note to also try and figure out a way to bring Ultra God back.
Well, I suppose we can start to investigate your father's death once we've got the rest of the team joined. Cindy is likely to be at the hospital.
Are you sure she'll want to help? Carrie asked.
I made a throat-slit gesture across my neck. I didn't want to get into this around Gabrielle, especially given what she was suffering through right now.
"What's wrong with Cindy?"
Gabrielle asked. Carrie ignored my gesture.
"She confessed her love to Gary, and he fumbled the return because he's still in love with his vampire wife."
The king shook his head. "You've checked into the Heartbreak Hotel, friend."
"I'm not in love with what is walking around in Mandy's corpse,"
I corrected her.
"Also, please kindly avoid quoting your songs in everyday conversations."
The king shrugged. "People expect it."
"Ignoring the fact that you talk to far too many people I can't see," Gabrielle said, "I'd like for you to know I approve. Cindy is a good girl."
I stared at her.
"No, she isn't."
Gabrielle paused.
"Okay, no, she isn't. However, she might be good for you."
"How reassuring." Carrie finished sweeping off the debris from our windows into a pile.
"You aren't jealous?
Putting aside the fact my father is dead, no. I long ago made a decision to put being a superheroine above any romantic considerations. Gary was when I chose that. I haven't changed my mind since."
"I thought you and the Golden Scarab.
Just sex and friendship.
That was the definition of my best relationships. Well, I trust Cindy to want to help. Diablo Man is just a phone call away, too. Are you sure he's someone you want working on this? I know you two have history."
"History is putting it mildly. If I was going to assume any single supervillain was responsible for Ultra God's death, Diablo Man would be high on the list. You didn't know him during the 90s. He was a terrifying monster who had all of the Nightwalker's intelligence, strength, and cunning combined with my father's leadership capabilities. He even destroyed the universe once."
Carrie paused in lifting a dustbin full of broken glass.
"How'd you destroy the universe?"
"Surprisingly easily, it turns out," I said, remembering how Zul Barbas had almost destroyed reality and remade it without any supers. I still had nightmares about a world where heroes only existed in fiction. "Thankfully, it can be rebooted."
"Oh," Carrie said. "I'm going to go hide under a pillow now."
I gave a dismissive wave. It's not that bad."
"Actually, it's much worse."
"Either way, Diablo Man has changed. I'd stake my life on that."
"You do. Every time you go out into the night with him, you hope and pray he doesn't revert to realizing you've given him access to millions in the way of funds he can use to rebuild his criminal organization, weapons he can use to take over the city, and powers that can be used to heal his crippling illness."
I looked over my shoulder. "Actually, I kind of healed Diablo Man of that crippling black magic illness which ended his career a while back. I stumbled over it when I was looking for a cure for Mandy."
Gabrielle closed her eyes. "Well, that's good."
"Hey, you believe in a redemption, right?"
"Yes, it's just harder when the person is the person responsible for the death of friends."
"I knew that feeling." "Yeah. Well, we don't have to call him."
"Do it,"
Gabrielle sighed. "We need all the criminal masterminds we can get on this. Carrie, could you go make sure Lisa isn't tweeting about all of this? If anyone can shake off ultra mesmerism, it's a teenage girl."
Carrie looked around.
"But I'm not done cleaning."
"You can afford to hire someone."
"But they might disturb our colony of sentient spiders from space in the basement."
"We have a what now?"
Carrie looked guilty.
"Yes, I will go deal with Lisa now. I'll do that and hope you forget about what I just told you."
Carrie quickly rushed out the door to the lounge. Gabrielle watched her leave.
"Man, and I thought my family was weird."
"Are you sure you don't want to call in any of your Shadow Seven friends? Maybe the former Texas Guardians?" I asked, starting to make a phone call on my computer watch. The Texas Guardians had been sort of a pre-team for younger or simply inexperienced superheroes. Texas was a state the size of a country with its own collection of myriad monsters, ruthless gangsters, supernaturals, and weirdness in constant need of dealing with. With the supervision of local heroes, the Texas Guardians had managed to make it one of the safest places in the world. Diablo Man had destroyed that safety with the aid of his cult and army of mercenaries, killing both a guitarist and his sister Spellbinder. It had triggered the dark age of superheroes every bit as much as shoot-'em-up murdering my brother. There were still some of them around, though, like the Texas Twister and the El Paso Avenger. I'd heard they'd even reformed the team, recruiting a new generation of young heroes and former sidekicks eager to make a name for themselves. The Shadow Seven were a different story, being something of a covert ops team of superheroes who didn't mind getting their hands dirty and supervillains looking for redemption.
It included Mandy's ex-girlfriend, Black Witch, the Red Schoolgirl, the Human Tank, the Bronze Medalist, ex-terrorist General Venom, and technically me. They did a lot of the work that people like President Omega tried to prevent, like protecting the people of Falcon Crest City during the fall and overthrowing dictators being propped up by the big nations.
"Not right now," Gabrielle said. "I don't know how many superheroes have been affected by the Ultra Imposter's powers, and if he doesn't know about Shadow Seven, that leaves them as a possible ace in the hole. Besides, I don't have enough friends in the world to risk them against a threat that can kill my father."
"Just all the world-destroying threats we've already faced together."
"Later, Gary, please."
I nodded and dialed Diablo Man. I heard the song Highway to Hell by AC/DC before he picked it up.
"I told you not to call me in the mornings. The shipments of weapons and robots will be ready for Operation Kingslayer."
"What was that?"
"Oh, hello, Gary," Diablo Man said, sounding chagrined. "I was just, planning the overthrow of a government."
"Ours?"
"Yes."
He sounded guilty.
"Super,"
I said, disappointed in Diablo Man. We were supposed to be a team. "However, I'm gonna need you to take a break from that to help me and Gabrielle solve a murder."
"Ooh."
"I'll tell you at Cindy's hospital. You never know who may be listening."
"Yet you speak about where we're going to meet."
I hadn't thought of that. "Just go there." I then shut off my computer. "Okay, everything's prepped. Are you okay keeping your powers on the down low? We don't want anyone picking up on your presence until we're ready to reveal ourselves. I've got a couple of changes of clothes in your size upstairs." "Have many women over, or is Cindy cosplaying as me?" I paused.
"Yes and no. I'm not saying to which. Let's go. To the Merciless Mobile!"
Gabrielle frowned. "Yeah, let's go play hero." I gave her another hug, and she broke down crying in my arms. I cried, too.
Chapter 11, where we discover not to screw around with a U.S. of A.
"This isn't quite the vehicle I expected you to be driving us out in," Gabrielle said, now wearing a pair of khaki pants and a white sweater. She had a pair of glasses on and her hair in a ponytail, which without ultra-mesmerism would have done little to disguise her identity as one of the world's most famous superheroines. The two of us were driving around in a white minivan with the words, "Carol's Floral Arrangements" on the side. I changed into a pair of black jeans and a black hoodie, which wasn't all that better disguise-wise. I looked like a hip new reimagining of Merciless rather than a 30-odd-year-old civilian. Incognito is not just a funny-sounding word. Even I know that, crazy house additions aside, I said from behind the wheel. Besides, I never quite got the hang of driving around the night car, so it's better to do this in case we get into any chase sequences.
I thought the night car, Merciless Mobile, or whatever, was self-driving.
Yeah, but that's cheating.
It was never really morning or afternoon in Falcon Crest City. Rain clouds, snow, or the towering gargoyle-covered buildings always blotted out the sun. Still, I noticed more people out and about than in previous trips. The fall had devastated the city, but almost two-thirds of the population had returned, with the remainder being replaced by new arrivals looking for cheap housing. There was something different about the city, too. The people who had been trapped in Dome had rallied together under Ultra Goddess and Mandy, which left them closer than they'd been before. With the destruction of the Brotherhood of Infamy, the police force was far less corrupt, too. I would never say the fall was a good thing. You only had to wait until night for that to be rebutted, but I did believe my city was going to rise from the ashes, stronger than before. "Or maybe I'm just kidding myself," I muttered.
"Thinking about your city?"
Gabrielle asked. "Yeah," I said, shaking my head. There was so much going on, it was hard to process it all. Superheroes have failed to stop big disasters before. Terrorist attacks, individual murders, and natural disasters. But this somehow feels different. It was the worst.
"Superheroes aren't invincible. Sometimes we fail."
That statement had a lot more weight to it, since I knew that Ultra God was dead.
"You did your best, but a lot of people expect you to be immortal and perfect."
"I wish that were true."
We passed by a statue of Ultra Goddess on the way to South Falcon Crest City. The proverbial wrong side of the tracks was one of the biggest changes in the area, as Karkovsky Company Construction was tearing down the slums to build better housing. Better housing which, shockingly, all of the residents would be able to afford. There was, hilariously, a billboard sign of Merciless endorsing Supercola over one of the finished buildings, and another of Cindy in her Red Riding Hood attire, telling parents to get their kids vaccinated.
or we're going to come and steal your stuff." I was pleased to say that little bit of fear-mongering had worked wonders. "You're very popular here. The supervillain thing doesn't seem to have affected that." I shrugged. "It seems if you kill a bunch of violent supervillains and psychotic superheroes before tossing around free money, people will start to like you." "You underestimate the kind of good you've done. That was mostly you and Mandy. I'm still the supervillain without mercy." "I still don't understand why you call yourself that. You do what you think is right and are one of the most merciful people I know." "You don't know me as well as you think you do." "I know you pretty well, enough to know it's not the city taking a hit which is bothering you." Gabriel looked out the window at a trio of black children playing with super soakers. One of them had scars around his neck from a zombie bite. "I'm sorry about what happened with Mandy. I heard about her transformation into a vampire and considered trying to help with it. I decided I'd only end up doing more harm than good." That got me curious. "Didn't you work with the vampire?" "Yes, Bloodscream the Retributive, or, as I like to call him, John. He was a good man who struggled every day to fake feeling mercy, pity, love, remorse, and friendship. He struggled to regain the sense of empathy he'd lost. In the end, the hunger won, and we had to put him down. He was my friend both before and after he died." I suspected there was something more there as well, or perhaps there simply could have been. "I'm not giving up on Mandy." Gabrielle removed her glasses and looked at me. "Is that because you think you can succeed, or because you blame yourself?" "It's because I can bring her back. If a man can fly, a woman can be restored from the dead. The city was overrun by fucking zombies last year. The least it can do is restore its protector to life." Gabrielle was silent. "If you figure out a way to reverse death, Gary, share it with the rest of us. You're not alone in feeling grief." That was a real kick in the chest. "Can't you just, I don't know, bring him back from the dead?" I asked. "I have a time machine."
"Those don't actually alter time, Gary."
I sighed. "Yeah, that's true. They just take you to a parallel universe. After I failed to help Mandy, I started using it to attend Beatles concerts." "Also to kill Nazis. A lot of Nazis." Gabrielle smiled.
"How did that work?"
"Pretty well," I said, smiling. "I'm actually friends with a couple of John Lennons."
"I'm surprised you came back to the future."
"I had considered at one point finding a Mandy and settling down with her. It wouldn't have been my Mandy, though. I would have been depriving another Gary of the opportunity to be with her as well. Even so, the temptation to look at her again had been overwhelming. I'd finally asked Diabloman to hide the machine so I could stop stalking my past self and wife on their happier days. Yeah, it was hard at times.
Thank you for helping with this, Gary. I don't know who else I could have turned to during all this."
"You have a lot of friends, Gabrielle."
"Not as many as you'd think. I was raised by superheroes, and that means there's always layers between the real person and who they pretend to be. Plenty of people saw me as Ultra God's daughter instead of Gabrielle Anders."
"You're both. You get to see both. Not many people do."
"You should tell Cindy." Gabrielle paused. "I think she knows, but you're right. She's my friend, too."
"We'd both kill for you." I noticeably avoided the word die. I was not a big fan of self-sacrifice, and considered it to be a sign of insufficient planning. There were people I was willing to die for, but I'd made a career of avoiding putting that to the test. Gabrielle nodded.
"You may have to do that in the future."
"You mean your father's killer?"
"I'm not an executioner by nature, but I also don't believe the legal system provides any greater sense of justification. We all have to do what we think is right in the end, and whoever killed my father can't be allowed to get away with that."
It was a very unsuperheroic sentiment, but a very human one. "Do you have any suspects?"
"As I stated, I don't think it's any of my father's old foes. They would have been dancing on the rooftops, shouting about how they triumphed over Ultra God at last. They also need to be someone who can create a near-perfect copy of my father, or have access to one, but are willing to use a gun to kill him. Your theory about the government is a viable one, but there's only one problem I can see."
"Which is?"
"They actually succeeded."
"That was black humor. Very black." Gabrielle gave me a nasty look.
"Oh, sorry," I said. "Not trying to be racial there."
Gabrielle gave another gallows chuckle.
"Any theories?"
"Have you considered Phantom?"
"Phantom?" Gabrielle said. "You're going all the way back to them?" It's a long shot, but it's not impossible. Phantom was a boogeyman that a lot of people considered to be nothing more than a relic of a less civilized age, something middle-aged men watched programs about on the History Channel, and had ceased to be relevant as anything other than stock villains on spy shows. My father had fought in the Second Vietnam War against them, and his speeches told me they were anything but a funny anachronism. Decades ago, after Ultra God had brought both Hitler and Stalin to kneel, everyone was ready to work toward a peaceful Europe. That had been when the Phantom Leader had arisen and started up World War II in earnest, conquering whole swaths of Europe and Russia before forcing other nations to ally with him at the point of a death ray. Phantom's operatives had aliens' technology, superpowers, magic, and worse. It had been a wake-up call for the world that not all supers were going to be superheroes, and the worst sort of people they could face had powers on their own. A lot of people had died in their labor camps. I still remember my Polish grandmother screaming once she found me and Carrie watching Hogan's Heroes. Phantom hasn't really been a thing since the 80s when it fought America Force One and the supergiant robots, Gabrielle said, crossing her arms. Older than dirt or immortal supervillains like Tom Terror, Dr. Thule, and Baroness Blitz use gangs armed with their own weaponry, but the last serious effort by them was the Berlin Offensive in 1991. I don't think they're going to prove responsible. I paused. The Nightmaster had Phantom stormtroopers accompanying her, back during the fall. Gabrielle blinked. That was the Brotherhood of Infamy, though. Phantom made use of a lot of magic during World War II, and the Brotherhood had a Nazi robot. Maybe there's a connection. The Brotherhood of Infamy had been motivated by a desire to destroy all supers in the world. They saw the world of mechanical wonders, people who could fly, and miracles, so they summoned a great beast to destroy it. They'd been richer than God, and President Omega had devoted a substantial amount of effort to making sure the fall wasn't prevented by superheroes. Maybe there was a connection between the Brotherhood and Phantom. The terrorist organization's leaders often said the only way to bring supers to heel was to destroy them, whether it employed them or not.
"You think the President of the United States is a member of a secret Nazi cult?"
Flo gasped. "It's possible," I suggested. "I mean, his last name is Omega. Have you ever noticed all the really bad guys have names like that?"
"No, I haven't. Your theory is stupid."
"Fine," I said. "I was just hoping all of our problems were interrelated. I'll keep my theorizing to myself until we have something more concrete."
"Probably a good idea."
We were silent for the rest of the trip to the South Falcon Crest Hospital, formerly the single largest ruined building in the city, and home to such wonderful people as the Malt Shop Gang, as well as a diverse collection of the city's drug dealers. Cindy had purchased the property, redeveloped it, hired on all manner of medical personnel, and then charged nothing for her help. It was, in simple terms, a gigantic money pit and the center of countless acts of criminal activity to keep it running. It also had saved something like 10,000 lives since starting operation. Entering through the sliding front doors, we were greeted by small crowds of people who were gathered around televisions spread throughout the main entranceway. They were holding each other, crying and staring at the news announcement being shown on every channel. For a second, I thought they'd announced Ultra God's death and the imposter had been revealed. Then I noticed Sally Sutler, the local anchorwoman, was showing a black and white of Gabrielle in her Ultra Goddess attire. It listed her birthday, followed by today's date at the bottom of the picture.
"Oh, those sons of bitches," Gabrielle whispered. "They've announced my death."
"That's going to be awkward when you show up again," I said. "Not if they claim I'm an alien imposter," Gabrielle muttered. I tried to figure out a way to reassure. "This stuff has happened before, right? Alien imposters, clones, and so on?"
"This is different," Gabrielle said, looking down the hall. "More final. Can we get to Cindy? I'm not really comfortable being this exposed."
"Sure." We walked down the hallway, and I couldn't help but notice people casting me nervous glances. I don't think any of them actually recognized me as Merciless, but my attire reminded them of such, and the reaction wasn't friendly like it used to be. Several people nervously tried to take cell phone pictures of me, only for me to duck or move. Something was wrong. I didn't get a chance to think too much on this fact before my cell phone started to play Witchy Woman by the Eagles. Carrie. Pulling in from my pocket, I lifted it up to my ear. "Hello?"
"Hey, Gary," my sister said.
"Yeah?"
"We've got a wee bit of a problem."
"How's that?"
"Let me send you a picture."
Carrie hung up, and seconds later, a picture of my mansion, or more precisely, the remains of the mansion, appeared. There was a gigantic crater where the building once stood. Someone had dropped a missile on top of the place, something you didn't often see happening within the continental United States.
I'd complained about my home being destroyed, but I'm more curious why you think Hawaii, Alaska, Puerto Rico, and Guam are more likely to be bombed, Cloak said, surprisingly deadpan about the whole thing.
I tried to process just what had happened. The destruction of my house by a bomb wasn't just a minor inconvenience, stolen wealth or not. President Omega had taken the gloves off, and with the entire United States behind him, he was all but invincible. It wasn't exactly like I could depend on due process after having flouted the law in astoundingly funny ways for the past year. I ignored him.
Is Lisa all right?
Yeah, I was out walking the dogs with her when the place exploded. Minutes later, some men in dark suits tried to grab us, only for my spooks to possess their car and crash into them. I think they were trying to kidnap us.
The president was officially no longer fucking around. He had also decided to go after my family. That settled that. Now I had to kill him. The very thought of it made me ill, but I decided to steel myself. He was a monster, the highest office in the land or not, and I needed to protect my loved ones. Oh, who the hell was I kidding? There was no good ending to this. Even if I took him down, the USA would hunt me and my loved ones forever.
It gets worse, Carrie said.
That wasn't good.
How?
They're saying you killed Ultra Goddess. A bunch of superheroes showed up and demanded to know where you are so they could kill you.
Well, shit.
Chapter 12. A friendly chat with Cindy about my being an idiot.
Carrie, are you all right? Gabrielle asked, reaching over to touch my arm. I took a deep breath. Surprisingly, yes. At least I'm no worse off than I was before finding out the government has framed me for killing America's sweetheart. Oh, yes, and they blew up my house.
My house, Cloak said, growling, which has been in the Warren family since the 18th century.
Which would explain why it was a bitch to get updated with decent electricity and Wi-Fi, I said, talking aloud. Seriously, though, Gabby, it's okay. No one I cared about was in the house when it went kaboom. If the events of the past year have taught me one thing, it's that the only real currency is those you love.
I see, Gabrielle said, keeping her expression even. Good.
I mean, it was nice having a mansion. I literally couldn't jog around before passing out. The heated underground grotto Cindy and I used to go skinny dipping in. The massive comic book collection with its own personal vault. The conservatory with man-eating plants. The literal shark tank. I mean, good God, you could play live-action Clue and pretend to be a Bond villain there.
Gabrielle kept patting me on the shoulder. I'm more concerned about the fact that it's increasingly apparent our suspicions about the president are correct.
Not necessarily. I am kind of an asshole, but given he's framing me for killing you, I suppose it's not a big step to think he's a bad guy, too.
Yes, Gabrielle said. So what we have to do next is clear.
Yep, kill the president. I'd just have to figure out some person to blame it on who wasn't me and whom the courts could execute in my place.
What? No! Gabrielle said, appalled.
Then we have different definitions of clear.
We need to prove I'm still alive, that my father has been replaced, and that the president had Ultra God killed, and then have him impeached.
Seems awfully complicated.
Do you really want to go down in history with Lee Harvey Oswald and John Wilkes Booth?
Everyone forgets Leon Czolgosz and Charles Guiteau.
Well, do you?
I sighed. No, I don't. As much as I don't think Diabloman would mind assaulting the White House and choking the first successful third-party candidate to death, that's the kind of heat I don't need. Also, I have a speck of a Grinch's heart three sizes too small of patriotism left in my body.
Gabrielle rolled her eyes.
Your nobility moves me. Come on, let's go get Cindy as I try and think of a plan to get President Omega to confess on live television that doesn't involve torture.
Torture doesn't work.
Only if you're interrogating someone and expect truthful answers like on television. For hurting people, it works fine.
I hate that you know that from experience, Cloak said.
Sometimes assholes have to be hurt. The two of us managed to avoid any more media attention as we reached Cindy's office on the second floor, taking the stairs to avoid crowds and walking in without bothering to knock. That proved to be a mistake, as the two of us found ourselves surrounded by hundreds of labeled plastic bags filled with Blitz, the most powerful supervillain-produced street drug in Falcon Crest City. Cindy was sitting behind her desk in a surgery mask, cutting a pile of red dust into manageable packets of 100 to put in each sack for distribution. She was in her civilian doctor's attire, her hair still in bunches, with a television on her desk showing the Esoterrorism movie, the one starring Carl Urban as Derek Hawthorne and Jessica Chastain as Shannon O'Reilly. Despite her last encounter ending in literal tears, Cindy looked up without a care in the world.
"Oh, hi, guys."
"Cindy," Gabrielle said, staring at the massive amount of narcotics around her. "This is horrifying." "Yeah, don't you have people to do this?" I asked, reaching over and taking a sniff of the red dust. The effects were an immediate sense of euphoria, followed by a somewhat goofy feeling. How I normally felt as a supervillain, basically. Gabrielle stared at me. "What?" I said.
"Speaking as a doctor, it's important that I properly match the purity and size of each Blitz package with appropriate instructions printed on the side for usage. Otherwise, they might be misused by consumers."
"Yeah, because junkies are so well known for following the warnings on printed labels," I said.
"Your prejudice against recreational drug use is terrible," Cindy said, shaking her head.
"Aren't you trying to reform?" Gabrielle said, feeling her face.
"Hey, I can be a good girl vigilante in a slutty sexy Halloween costume and a drug-dealing, free hospital-running doctor. There are no laws against that."
"There are like 30, actually," I said. "But who's equivocating?"
"God, Gary, spare me the lecture. This is like that time you tried to convince me The Force Awakens wasn't crap."
"How can you not like The Force Awakens?" It was more a statement than a question. My mind momentarily lost track of why I was here thanks to the Blitz.
"What?"
Cindy said, pulling her surgery mask down around her neck.
"It's just A New Hope with new characters and more lens flare."
"Heathen," I said, appalled. "There's Kylo Ren, though, and Rey, and stuff. The thing with Han." "Guys," Gabrielle started to speak.
"Adam Driver was hot in it, I admit," Cindy said, sighing. "But you don't think Rey was a Mary Sue? I mean, I like the fact that a woman is headlining a Star Wars movie, but we didn't see Luke pick up a lightsaber to fight Darth Vader after Obi-Wan died. Luke lost the fight in The Empire Strikes Back, which was great because it's realistic."
"No, she's not a Mary Sue," I said. "There's a high probability of prior Jedi training or being part of the Chosen One's bloodline. Maybe she's even Anakin reincarnated if you want to go with some crack internet theories."
"Guys," Gabrielle said, speaking louder. "First of all, if it's not on screen, then it doesn't count. Second, Luke and Leia are Vader's kids and didn't..."
"Where's your sense of loyalty?" I shouted, appalled.
"The prequels killed it. Kylo Ren is also Vader's grandson. That should also cancel out any advantage."
"Guys," Gabrielle said, getting our attention. "Focus, please." "All right," I said, then looked back at Cindy. "Poe Dameron is going to be the new Han."
"Poe Dameron should be dead. The TIE fighter exploded,"
Cindy snapped back.
"Are you done?"
Gabrielle said. "Because I never thought I'd say this. You guys may be too geeky for a girl who slept with her stuffed Ewok until she was 30.
"I can steal you a replacement," Cindy offered. "In the original packaging, no less."
Gabrielle felt her face, half laughing and half horrified, but looking more amused than she'd been since the start of the crisis.
"You two are just so bad at not being supervillains."
"We're trying not to be?" I asked, genuinely confused.
Sort of,"
Cindy said. I took a deep breath, deciding to get down to business. "I suppose there's no use beating around the bush. I've got some terrible news. Ultra God is dead."
"Oh, wow,"
Cindy said, blinking as she took that in. "I'm afraid so," I said, lowering my head.
"How long do you think that's going to last?"
Cindy asked. "Wait, what?" I looked up.
"He's the most popular, most successful superhero of all time. There's no way he's going to stay dead."
"Cindy," I snapped. "It doesn't work like that," Gabrielle said. "I'm sorry to say."
"Sure it does. This is like the third time he's died for real, let alone all the fake-outs with robots or shape changes. I've read your historical comics. You and your dad have literally met God 3 or 4 times. Just dial him up and ask for a freebie."
I balled my fist, furious at how insensitive my partner was being. "It didn't exactly help Mandy, did it?"
"Have you talked to Death?"
Cindy suggested. "Yes," I muttered. "She's also offered to resurrect Mandy if I do her a favor."
"See?"
Cindy said. It's a matter of perseverance.
Gabrielle blinked. You don't think death could? Please don't put me in the awkward position of being forced to choose between resurrecting my wife and your father.
Sorry, Gabrielle said. Really?
Thank you. Well, that was a mood changer. Oh, Ultra God has been replaced by an evil doppelganger and has turned the Society of Superheroes against Gabrielle by claiming she's the evil doppelganger. Also, they think I murdered the real Gabrielle and the president had my house hit by a drone strike.
And your first choice of action was to come to a hospital full of civilians, Cindy said. Great thinking.
I paused. When put like that, it's probably a good idea for me to depart this place.
Probably a good idea, Cindy said.
We need your help, Cindy. I don't know who I can trust. Gabrielle looked over her shoulder. The government is deeply involved in this and watching our every move.
Please tell me you have evidence and it's not because Gary has co-opted you into one of his right-wing conspiracy theories.
I glared at her. I am a left-wing conspiracy theorist, thank you. Less the Illuminati, FEMA, and secret Nazi reptile men than the government is run by corporations as well as fascist imperialists.
And the president is trying to kill you? Cindy said.
Yes, I said. Cindy rubbed the bridge of her nose.
Okay, well, the Brotherhood of Infamy was secretly controlling Falcon Crest City the entire time, so I'm inclined to give this a fair shake. I also love Gary and consider you a close friend, Gabby, so let's do this.
Wait, you love Gary? Gabrielle said. Yeah, that's a new development. We're still sorting through that, I said.
What's to sort out? You don't feel the same way. I'll just have to deal with that.
I didn't say that, I snapped back.
So you do love me?
Cindy asked, blinking. This is... Gabrielle paused. As much as I love both of you, I'd like to state that we can talk about this outside of the hospital when we're not being hunted by the president's goon squad.
Goon squad, really?
Cindy said, putting her elbows on the desk and resting her chin on her crossed hands.
Listen, guys, don't you think you're being a little bit paranoid? The government hasn't been able to do anything about the supervillain problem in the United States for, 75 years. I don't think we're going to have to worry about them tracking us down.
A nurse ran in through the door, ignoring the massive amount of drug paraphernalia. He looked oddly like Ben Stiller, and I wondered if he was one of the shape-changers Cindy and I had recruited from the various exiled aliens left over from the last failed invasion.
Dr. Witkowski, the hospital is surrounded by a bunch of giant robots and armed paramilitary forces led by cyborgs.
I looked at the door. Maybe we should have gotten out of here sooner.
You think?
Cindy said, shooting me a nasty look before tapping a button underneath her desk and turning around her seat. Half of the wall in front of her slid away to reveal a complicated, Xerist, futuristic 1960s computer system and television set I remembered she'd bought from Dr. Dinosaur's estate sale. Liver cancer. Poor bastard. Cindy fiddled with the switches and knobs before it conjured up an image of the hospital's outside in glorious black and white. The hospital was indeed surrounded by 20-foot-tall robots, mecha tanks, black jeeps, and armies of soldiers in power armor. They had a gear logo with a sword through it, which put me in mind of Fallout's Brotherhood of Steel, a reference you're only likely to get if you're a dedicated gamer. There were close to 100 of them, and they'd blocked off traffic as well as taken prisoners.
Dark light,
Gabrielle said, just when I thought things couldn't possibly get worse.
Who?
Cloak explained for me. After the civil war between Guinevere and Ultra God over the superhuman law manipulated by the space god Entropicus, the Foundation for World Harmony was briefly replaced with Darklight. It's a collection of mercenaries drawn from America's prisons and asylum, and those who failed in the actual military. All of them had portions of their brains removed and replaced with cybernetics, which was downloaded with obedience as well as martial training. They plan to arrest all supers, depower them with Tom Terror's ray gun, and then execute them.
That's pretty damn evil.
Yes, it was all proven to be a plot by Phantom, and they were all arrested. They shouldn't be here.
No shit, they shouldn't be here, I muttered.
That was when the video feed went frizzy and was replaced, ironically enough, with the plastic, blandly handsome features of President Omega. He was a tall Caucasian man with a good head of hair and a smile that was just a little too broad. He was standing in front of a podium with a dozen microphones, but the presidential seal had been replaced with the Omega symbol from the Roman alphabet, plus the motto, "In Omega We Obey." Which honestly didn't even make sense. President Omega had a goofy, almost psychotic grin on his face, exposing his too-many-teeth smile.
Hello, folks. I thought I'd address you personally, you know, before I kill you. And believe me, Gary, I've been looking forward to it for a long time.
I knew I should have voted for the other guy, I muttered.
He does have some redeeming qualities, Gabrielle said. Like now I know who to punch to the moon.
He is like President Evil, Cindy said. We should totally make that his code name.
Versus President Omega, I said, looking at her.
What about it? It's his name,
Cindy asked, confused. What do you want, Omega? Gabrielle growled, staring at the black-and-white screen. President Omega smiled. It was a plastic, almost inhuman look.
To conquer the world, exterminate all supers, re-engineer humanity to become a race of cybernetic fascists, and then proceed to unleash a jihad on the rest of the universe where we exterminate all life different from ourselves. Oh, and to balance the budget.
Well, that's a shitty way of doing it, I said. Unlimited military spending is how we got into this mess. Gabrielle shot a look at me rather than at him. How the hell did a psychopath like you get elected in the first place? I said, at least glad my enemy had shown his true colors.
Time travel, President Omega said, smiling. I was born in the 49th century, you see, where everything is peaceful and joyous. So I built a time machine, traveled to the last century when people were interesting, and proceeded to manipulate the economy by causing financial crisis after financial crisis, before eliminating all of my potential competition. Unfortunately, every time I tried to eliminate the various superheroes that stood in my way of making a really fun future, my plans failed. They have protection from higher authorities than even my Lord Entropicus is able to match, at least until now.
Lord Entropicus was the immortal space god who ruled over the planet Abaddon at the end of time. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried. He was also the force that phantom soldiers worshipped, and responsible for all manner of horrific universe-conquering plans. Tom Terre may have been Ultra-God's arch-enemy, but Entropicus was probably his most dangerous foe. His being the patron of President Omega explained a lot.
Cindy, are you recording this? I asked, hoping his talk had given us some evidence against him. It wouldn't be rock solid in a world of shapeshifters, illusionists, alternate universe doppelgangers, and robot replacements, but it would be something we could use.
Cindy sighed.
Nope, I didn't buy the tape drives this thing uses. Shame, this would have been really convenient.
You killed my father, Gabrielle said, balling her fists. You monster!
Oh, even better, I've replaced your father, President Omega said. Just like I'm going to replace you and the rest of the society of superheroes with nasty anti-hero versions of themselves from a reality so dark it might as well have been written by a British comic book writer. Your society of superheroes is so used to blindly following Ultra God, they'll do half of my job for me before they realize it's leading to their graves.
Nice plan, I said. You would know, President Omega said.
I looked at him, confused.
Uh-huh.
Well, at least I knew whom I had to kill to get back Mandy now. Death had wanted me to find the person responsible for Ultra God's death and kill him. Honestly, I was kind of glad it turned out to be a time-wielding despot, since that sort of removed any moral ambiguity from the situation. The fact he was a time traveler also meant it was possible to fix all of the crap he'd pulled. Because that's how it worked according to my understanding of temporal physics, which was derived primarily from Star Trek and Back to the Future. Then again, I remembered Omega Corp from my childhood on, and if he'd screwed up time that badly, then who knew what fixing things would entail? I didn't want to end up like the finale of Continuum, another work that Cindy and I disagreed on.
One last question, dipshit, I said, staring at him.
Oh, go ahead. I'm just taking a break from using my mind-control satellites to take over the world. President Omega spoke with a childish glee. It was like hearing myself talk about supervillainy. First Lady Omega, wearing a replica of Jackie O's iconic pillbox hat and coat, chased a senator in front of the camera with a fire axe while cackling madly. Weirdly, she bore a suspicious similarity to Cindy now that she was covered in blood and laughing. Constance Omega shouted.
I tried to ignore that.
Why me? Is this really all about ripping your company off? Why all the effort to blowing up my house and putting a bounty on my head? President Omega blinked, then looked surprised.
Oh, you think I'm trying to kill you?
No, 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 Gary, quite the opposite. All that is done by the Resistance, aided by the Time Police. They're trying to get me through you. You see, you're my father.
My eyes widened.
Chapter 13. Where We Choose to Be Heroes and Villains. I stared at the screen, gobsmacked. So did Cindy and Gabrielle. President Omega was my son? Who was his mother? What did this mean? Omega stared back at us, meeting our gaze. He then struggled to suppress a grin before bursting out laughing. Just kidding! I'm not your son. No, I just hate you for reasons that would involve revealing way too much of my evil plan. Oh, fuck you, I said, appalled. Cindy couldn't help but burst out laughing. I'm sorry, Gary, but that's actually pretty damn funny. President Omega snorted. I mean, how would that even make any sense? I'm older than you and from the fucking future. I mean, yes, time travel, but what are the odds? The nurse who was still in the room said, Actually, assuming Gary has a child that lives to pass on their genes, then the statistical likelihood of being your ancestor by the 49th century is actually pretty good. Get that guy out of here, I said, shaking my head. So yeah, I actually am responsible for all of that horrible stuff that has happened to you, Omega said. I even prevented the military from putting down the zombie apocalypse in your hometown, less to discredit the Society of Superheroes than to ruin you personally. Not that the Society of Superheroes needs much discrediting with how little they change this world. I mean, 40 super scientists and they still haven't cured cancer? Dr. Eon is useless. Again, why me? I asked, wondering how Omega had disguised his insanity so long. Probably robot doppelgangers, Cloak said, though the ability to reverse time means he really only has to disguise it once. I needed to get me some of that. You really don't, Cloak said. Omega's smile became predatory. You keep acting like this is some sort of personal vendetta. Oh, it is, but not the way you think. Do you know what the best part of time travel is? The complete lack of consequences of being an asshole. I killed the girls who disliked me in high school. I had my mother banished to some hellish torture dimension for not catering to my every whim. Yesterday, I had the guy who screwed up my latte's entire family killed. Then I had them reanimated so they could eat him. I'm that much of an asshole. Why you, Gary? Because I don't like you. Your giving away all that money you stole from me really offended me. I also have had to listen to you way too many times these past few months planning this whole shebang. Cindy and Gabrielle exchanged a look, then gave one to me. I shrugged my shoulders. I had no idea what he was talking about. I'm confused. Get used to it, President Omega said. Today I'm going to kill a few million people, and by the weekend I hope to have slain an even billion. A glassy-eyed, playboy bunny-dressed woman whom I recognized as a prominent journalist brought Omega a martini, followed by a similarly confused-looking male in a Chippendales outfit who gave the president a napkin to stuff down his shirt. You're a monster, Gabrielle said. Exactamundo, Omega said, drinking his martini and letting some spill on his shirt due to the way his mouth was shaped. Now you're going to turn Gabrielle over to me so I can use her as the power source for a big Death Star-sized laser I'm building so I can blow up planets of peaceful aliens. Yeah, I don't think so. I looked at Cindy. Is there an off switch for this thing? Sure, Cindy said. I'm tired of this channel anyway. You'll do it, Omega said, smiling. Otherwise, Darklight has orders to kill every single man, woman, and child in the hospital. Gabrielle said, You'll never get away with this. Omega made finger guns at me. That's what they said destroying Patience, Delaware. It's amazing what you can get away with when you have sufficiently advanced technology indistinguishable from magic, mostly because it runs on magic in the 49th century. You have a minute to decide. And you'll kill us when we surrender, I said. Probably, Omega said. Hell, I'll probably have everyone in the hospital killed anyway. Adios. He lifted his martini glass and disappeared. A test pattern on the screen replaced his image before going back to the Darklight unit, which had now completely surrounded the hospital. They also had dozens of hostages lined up for execution in front of the building. Roadblocks and black helicopters kept other people from coming to the scene, and it wouldn't be surprised if they were jamming all communication in or out. When this whole ordeal was done, the story would be anything they wanted it to be. I imagined it would be, United States government avenges the death of Ultra Goddess by killing terrorist Gary Karkovsky. 300 hospital patients were killed in the ensuing firefight. I looked at Cindy. And to think you voted for him.
He seems so nice in his political ads, Cindy said. He promised to lower taxes and deal with the supervillain problem.
We're the supervillain problem, I shouted.
I know that now.
Gabrielle, meanwhile, was silent. A silence she broke for a second. This is why.
What?
I said, confused.
This is why the world fucking sucks, Gabrielle said, conjuring a giant ultra-force fist and smashing the table. Do you want to know why world hunger, cancer, war, and worse haven't been solved by superheroes yet? Because of assholes like that, people who ruin other people's lives for shit and giggles, and because it makes them feel like big men, the guys who think the only way they can be better is by making other people feel worse. This is the difference between superheroes and supervillains. This is...
I gave her a hug. Cindy got up and also hugged her. The nurse started to join us before I growled at him. It's okay, I said. We'll get through this.
I have to try and save these people, Gabrielle said, even if it's a trap.
Duh, Cindy said. It's not unselfish to protect people while trying to save yourself. It's just sensible for maintaining enlightened interest.
What?
Gabrielle said. I think she's suggesting we should just kill those bastards outside and leave, I said.
I don't kill, Gary, Gabrielle said, looking down.
You don't have to, I whispered. I will, starting with these guys out there and ending with President Omega. Gabrielle looked down.
Thank you.